Thank you, Jenny, for reading that tricky chapter. I thought I'd give you a shorter chapter, but I also gave you the one with the most difficult names in it to pronounce. So thank you for your hard work on that one. Now, today we have what is probably one of my favourite parts of the book of Isaiah so far. The whole book is pretty good and has lots of beautiful poetic moments. But what unfolds today is a rather dramatic story that is masterfully told. Now, often when I read stories like this, I lose patience with the biblical sort of language and I haven't invested that much into what's going on. But if you've been following our series on Isaiah, then hopefully you have a bit of a grasp on the stakes of this situation. This is also the part that I have been teasing you all about for the last few weeks. Now, I know that it is Mother's Day, and I also know that there is nothing that mothers love more than a good historical drama. So rather than an affirming or rebuking message on Proverbs 31, I think what mothers mostly need is a journey into a wonderful historical land with heroes and villains. So this is where we are going today. Now, so far, if we have to sum up Isaiah's message to the people, his message would probably be, trust God. Now, as Isaiah has prophesied over the reigns of four different kings, each king has had different challenges in how they were to trust God. Uzziah was the first one. He trusted God, and the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom, prospered. But they grew complacent, and they didn't trust God with their wealth and success. They were religiously faithful, but they didn't trust God to the point where they would live the way that he wanted them to. So Isaiah warned that they would eventually grow cold to God and go into exile. The next king was Jotham. See, I'm struggling with names today too. And we don't have anything to say about Jotham because Isaiah doesn't really have anything to say about him. Then we get the bad king Ahaz. Ahaz didn't trust God with hard times. Now, if you remember in chapter 7, Israel, the northern kingdom, had joined forces with Syria and they were going to attack the southern kingdom of Judah and overtake them and install a different king so that they could have their own little alliance going and try and be stronger. Now, Ahaz, the king, was at the aqueduct in Jerusalem when Isaiah came to assure Ahaz that he could trust in God in the upcoming battle. At the aqueduct, Ahaz rejected trust in God. And instead, he made a deal with the growing evil empire of Assyria, who decided to help them by invading the whole area and making Judah one of its puppet kingdoms. Ahaz was mostly on board with Assyria, and he rips apart the temple and instead makes it a place to worship Assyrian gods because he thought, well, obviously they're stronger because Assyria seems to be doing better than we are. He also puts places to worship these gods up all around the kingdom. But things are not good under Assyria. So from that point on, there's been general unrest in the area, where each nation is trying to find out a way out from being under the thumb of Assyria. Isaiah keeps trying to tell the people that the one with real power, the one who is in control, is their God, Yahweh. God has power even over Assyria, and he's the only one worth turning to. Hezekiah took over after his evil father passed away. And he is a good king. He trusts in God. He tears down all the places of worship for the false gods and that his father put up around the place. And he tries to reach out to the northern kingdom of Israel. And some of them come over and celebrate the Passover together. He does not like the Assyrians. So he begins to look at what alliances he can make to get out of their situation. And through it all, Isaiah keeps telling him to trust in God, not in political gains. He helps some rebels attack a city in Philistia. Now, that's where the Philistines come from. They are quite successful. They free a city from Assyrian control. He also decides that he's going to make an alliance with Egypt. Isaiah warns that alliances like this will end badly. Don't trust in other nations, but trust in God. Then the king of Assyria dies and his son takes over. And that's probably what has prompted some of Hezekiah's bold moves against them. But the new Assyrian king wants to make a name for himself, and he cannot allow Judah to rebel against them. We saw a few weeks ago that Isaiah said that they should continue to trust God, and he prophesied that Assyria would put Jerusalem, the capital city of Judah, under siege, but God will make it so their armies will just up and leave. Today we're finally going to find out what happens when they come. We will learn if Isaiah's prophecy comes true or if they will be destroyed. Now, Sennacherib is the evil king of the evil Assyrian Empire. He gets fed up with the disrespect that Judah is showing them, so he sends an invading force. And he also sends an envoy to Hezekiah saying, if you give us 300 pieces of gold and silver, then King Sennacherib will accept it and he will not destroy you. So Hezekiah plunders his treasury, and even the outside bits of the temple, he takes bits of gold off so that he has enough to pay off Sennacherib. So Hezekiah plunders everything, gets it together, and then it seems that Sennacherib is just fed up and he decides to attack anyway. His army is very successful. They are very good at being an evil empire. And they take 46 fortified cities and many towns. After Jerusalem, the next biggest city in Judah is Lachish, which has very good defences, and it is 26 miles southwest of Jerusalem. Sennacherib is just finishing his siege of Lachish. It was a great victory for Sennacherib. We know that it was a great victory for him because he commissioned these massive stone reliefs depicting the battle that he had all over the walls on one of the rooms in his palace. They are in the British Museum today. They were about 2.6 metres tall and they ran the lengths of the walls around this room. There is no doubt that news of this great victory is starting to reach Hezekiah at Jerusalem. I wonder what sort of mix of fear, shame, and regret he would be feeling at that moment. His people all over his kingdom were being killed, some were being tortured, and some were being sent away into exile to be part of the Assyrian Empire in another country. Now, it's at this moment that the passage starts today. Hezekiah has been reigning for 19 years, and his little attempts at rebellion against Assyria and against Assyria's gods has led him into an impossible situation. He is where his father was when they were under threat by Israel and Syria 30 years before. Only this is much worse. Where will he place his trust? Sennacherib, the evil emperor, sends his official with a great army to come and meet Hezekiah and make him surrender. Now, the name of the official in Hebrew is called the Rabshakeh, but no one knows what that means, so it's often translated as different things. The NIV says the field commander. It could mean something like chief cupbearer or chief butler or chieftain. Whatever it actually means, whoever he was, the Rabshakeh was his representative. So I will call him Rabshakeh because that sounds like a sort of villainish name of someone who would be part of an evil empire. So they come to the aqueduct outside of Jerusalem. Now, this is the exact same place where Ahaz was asked to trust God and Ahaz rejected God's help. A group of Hezekiah's officials come out and they talk to the Rabshakeh. They shout their messages from the safe walls above to the ground below, which has a vicious-looking army which has just destroyed most of their country sitting down there. Along with Hezekiah's officials, there are many nervous citizens of the city waiting on the walls, listening to see what is going to happen and what their fate is going to be. Now, the Rabshakeh has a message for Hezekiah from Sennacherib. He says, "Why are you rebelling and not surrendering? What is it that you trust in that has made you so stubborn? Do you trust in Egypt? Leaning on Egypt is like leaning on a broken walking stick. As soon as you put pressure on it, it will break and the shards of it will stab you in the hand. Do you trust in Yahweh? You may say that you do, but didn't you remove all those places of worship to him and make everyone in your nation come to just one place to worship him at the temple in Jerusalem? If you put your trust in Sennacherib and make a deal, we can give you more military power than Egypt. That's if you even have enough men to use our chariots. Also, wasn't it Yahweh who gave us the power to destroy your land? Yahweh told us to come to your land and destroy it." Now, this is a very persuasive and tricky speech. It sows doubt into any hope that they had and undermines any decision that Hezekiah can make except to surrender. The people listening in from the wall must have started to react. So Hezekiah's officials say, "Look, we can speak Aramaic. Speak to us in Aramaic, in that language, so the conversation stays between us." The Rabshakeh says, "Well, why not let them hear it? You and your king will make decisions, but these people are the ones who are going to live with the consequences. They're going to have to live off their own excrement when we put this city under siege." The Rabshakeh then calls out to all the people who can hear. He says, "Don't let Hezekiah deceive you. He cannot save you. And don't let him make you trust Yahweh, saying that Yahweh will save you. Make your peace with the king of Assyria, and he will give you your own land to live on. He'll give you your own land to use, and you'll be able to grow plenty to eat. Yahweh will not deliver you. The king of Assyria has conquered lots of nations, and none of their gods helped them. He even conquered your brothers in the northern kingdom of Israel. Why should this be any different? Why should Yahweh save you?" They were all silent, as Hezekiah had commanded that they don't respond. They headed back to report to Hezekiah. They tore their own clothes, which was what an ancient person would do if they heard terrible or devastating news. They were in mourning. Hezekiah hears the report, and he too tears his clothes and covers himself in sackcloth and goes to the temple. Now, I find that this thing happens when I read these Bible stories where we can often feel fairly removed from the situation. We have a sense where we kind of know how the story ends, maybe. We know that God never lets his people down, not in the Bible anyway. But we don't always know it in our everyday situations. It's easy to speculate that things are going to be fine for Hezekiah and God will pull through because, well, he always does. But this is the ultimate test for him about whether or not he's actually going to trust in God. I also find that I'm often happy to trust in God when it's about my individual comfort or my individual struggle that's at stake. But if it's my family or other people who will suffer, maybe I'm not always as ready to let them suffer for my faith or trust. For Hezekiah, he has people to look after who are going to suffer if he gets it wrong. Hezekiah must be wondering, maybe Isaiah got it wrong. Will it be so bad if they bow down to the king of Assyria? He seems to be offering lots of nice things. The Rabshakeh's speech was masterful propaganda. Hezekiah then sends his men to go and see Isaiah, telling him what had happened and relaying the seriousness of the situation. They call it a day of distress, of rebuke, and of blasphemy. He says that maybe Yahweh will not take kindly to what the Rabshakeh said, and he asks Isaiah to pray for the people who will be left over. Isaiah sends him back a message that says, "Don't worry. Yahweh heard all that happened. He heard the emperor's childish servants revile him. Yahweh will put on him a spirit so they hear a rumor and return to their own land. And Sennacherib, he will die by the sword in his own land." When the Rabshakeh heads back to his emperor, he finds that Lachish is destroyed and the army has moved on. They've started to reposition their army to fight Egypt because they hear that the king of Cush was marching out against them, a rumor that causes them to leave just as Isaiah had said. Maybe for Hezekiah, he might be thinking that maybe this is his alliance with Egypt that might have saved him. They're now coming to his aid. But as the evil emperor Sennacherib moves his army to a better combat position, he sends a letter to Hezekiah saying, "Don't you dare think that by trusting in God you are saved. I will take Jerusalem and God will not save you." He then lists a bunch of nations that he and his father conquered that were not saved by their gods. They are not out of the woods yet. Hezekiah then takes the letter and goes to the temple and he lays it down before God and he prays. He has chosen to put his faith. He has not chosen to put his faith in Egypt, but he's decided to trust God. He prays saying, "O Yahweh, the commander of heavenly armies, God of Israel enthroned above the cherubim, you are the God, you alone. Of all the kingdoms of the earth, you have made heaven and earth. Incline your ear, O Yahweh, and hear. Open your eyes, O Yahweh, and see, and hear all the words of Sennacherib, which he has sent to mock the living God. Truly, O Yahweh, the kings of Assyria have laid waste to all the nations and their lands and have cast their gods into the fire. For they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore, they were destroyed. So now, O Yahweh, our God, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you alone are Yahweh." Isaiah then sends him a message which, in summary, says, "Because you prayed to God and trusted him with the situation, this is what he says to you. Assyria hates you because you will not bow to them, but I am your God. They have mocked and reviled me. They think that they are pretty good because of their success, but everything they have done was actually in line with my plans. Now, because they have raged against me, I will grab them by the ear and drag them home. The whole nation of Judah has been severely damaged by their attack. We have archaeological digs where they've dug into Lachish and they have found a layer of ash where the city was burned completely to the ground. Sennacherib is still threatening, and they have a long way to go before they will recover." So God continues to talk through Isaiah, and he says that he will offer this sign that everything will be okay. "In the first year, you will eat what naturally grows from the ground. In the second year, what springs up from that. And in the third, you will plant crops and harvest from them. and they will grow again into a strong nation. God says that the king of Assyria will not take their city. Then the book of Isaiah tells us that the angel of Yahweh goes out and strikes down 185,000 men in the Assyrian camp. And so they flee back to their capital city of Nineveh. Now we have a lot of Assyrian records of the time which match up a lot with what Isaiah's account says. They don't say anything about many soldiers dying in the middle of the night, but they do talk about victory at Lachish and Sennacherib's desire to make Hezekiah pay for rebellion. Based only on Assyrian records, though, it seems like they're all set to take Jerusalem and take over it, but they just mysteriously head back home. And when Sennacherib goes home, he makes those massive stone reliefs commemorating his great victory at Lachish, which he was a king who had a reputation for power. And so even though he didn't take Jerusalem, I think that he would have made these big trophies for his victory so that he didn't have, the victory that he did have against Judah to save face. He couldn't take Jerusalem, so he brags about Lachish instead. Then, true to Isaiah's prophecy, Sennacherib never came back to Judah. And 20 years later, he is worshipping one of his Assyrian gods in their temple, and he is stabbed to death by his sons. It seems that Sennacherib's gods could not save him either. Hezekiah put his trust in God, and God came through for him. All the other things that looked like they would help were nothing compared to God. We then get another couple of stories from Hezekiah's life. Now, this probably occurred in the lead up to Assyria's attack. So it's likely that this first story gives Hezekiah some confidence in God. Now, you may remember his great-grandfather Uzziah grew proud and entitled and wanted to go into places in the temple where he wasn't allowed, so he was struck with leprosy. Well, Hezekiah has a different disease story. Hezekiah gets sick, and then Isaiah visits and he tells him that God says that he's going to die. Hezekiah prays and pleads with God, and God says again through Isaiah that God has heard him and he will give him another 15 years of life. And during that time, God will save him and his city from the hands of Assyria. God encourages him with this sign. We then have a song that is written by Hezekiah about God saving him. Then Isaiah puts figs on Hezekiah's boil and he recovers. This episode gives us some insight into why Hezekiah had faith that God would save them from Sennacherib. God built up Hezekiah's faith in advance. However, alongside this story of trust in God, Isaiah leaves us with this section with a story about Hezekiah's doubt, which leaves us in ominous foreboding for the next section. The main problem that the kings of Judah have faced up till now is that they do not trust in God. They put their trust in other nations and sometimes other gods. The other nations vary between being neutral or being rather evil. The most evil nations are Egypt, Babylon, and of course Assyria. Hezekiah trusted an alliance with Egypt, and that is what had put them in their predicament. Shortly after God heals Hezekiah, giving him another 15 years, the king of Babylon hears about it. And Babylon are constantly trying to get rid of Assyria. They always want to grow their alliances with anyone who will help. So he sends an envoy with gifts to Hezekiah to say, "I'm glad you are well," which in king speak is, "I'm glad you're better. Maybe if you have a weekend free later, we can go out rebelling against Assyria together." Now, Hezekiah, thinking that an alliance would benefit him and may be his way out of strife with the Assyrians. He shows the envoys all of the treasures and the fancy things in their lands. This is both boastful and it is trying to trust in Babylon for their safety. Isaiah then comes to Hezekiah and he asks him about what happened. Who were these people? What did they see? Hezekiah tells him, and then Isaiah prophesies. He says, "Hear the word of Yahweh of armies. Behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house and all that which your fathers have stored up till this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says Yahweh. And some of your own sons who will come from you, whom you will father, shall be taken away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." Hezekiah then says, this is a good word, because at least there will be peace and security while he is alive. So amongst Hezekiah's trust in God, there are some far-reaching consequences when he puts his trust in earthly kingdoms. We know that in about 100 years, these words will come true. Hezekiah trusts something other than God, and it ends badly. Today, we have seen Hezekiah faced with a similar choice to his father and other kings, and he is the one who chose to trust God. We've seen God come through and do what he promised. We've seen that God also built up Hezekiah's faith and trust. Now, I spent most of today just telling the story, and the reason is that for a lot of the book of Isaiah, we've had these prophecies urging the kings and the people to trust God. And at the end of those prophecies, I tell you to trust God. But in this story that closes this section of Isaiah and opens up the next one, we have that trust in God in action. We have a more dire situation than any of us have ever faced in our lives. We have Hezekiah faced with pressures from all around not to trust God, from the silver-tongued Rabshakeh to Hezekiah's men coming back with torn clothes, mourning what is going to happen, to the people of the city who would be rightly fearing for their lives. And God comes through for them just as he said he would. So today I want to leave you with that story. I can and I will tell you each week that you can trust God. I can tell you which part of your lives you should trust God in. But I want to leave you with this story as Isaiah does, to show you that you can trust God. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, thank you that you are a God that we can trust. There are lots of things in this world looking for our alliances, our attention, that promise us lots of things, but we know that in all that we can trust in you. Thank you for the story of Hezekiah and his faith in you. I pray, Lord, that when we face difficult situations, we can trust you also. And I pray, Lord, that we can show others that they can also trust in you. I pray these things in Jesus' name, for your glory. Amen.